C.M. Mayo, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted and honored to be speaking with you.
And you were born in El Paso. I did not know that about you until I read the bio on the back of this fantastic book we're about to talk about.
Yeah, so El Paso has a very special place in my heart.
And when was the last time you were here?
I think it would have been 2015.
Oh, wow.
But no, it was more recently. I'm sorry. I think it was 2017.
Wow. I wish I had known that. I would have organized a reading.
I actually come through it fairly frequently. Yeah.
Yeah, we would have organized a reading here. And our, you know, I'm the chair of the creative writing department at UTEP. And yeah, had I known you were in town, that would be...
Well, anytime. I'd be delighted.
Next time, let us know for sure. But anyway, I want to get started talking about this incredible, fascinating book, Metaphysical Odyssey into the Mexican Revolution. And the subtitle is Francisco E. Madero and His Secret Book, Spiritist Manual. I've heard you comment on this book. In the book itself, there's extensive research, and you make it very clear that you're not the first one to write about this subject. So, but I'd like to skip over the history of those who have written about it and just get into the discovery itself, that how you discovered that Francisco Madero, who is well known as the leader of the 1910 revolution in Mexico, one of the most iconic figures of the Mexican Revolution, how you found out he was a medium and an active and very advanced practitioner of occult metaphysics. How did you find this out?
That's right. You know, I happened to have a private tour of his archive, and at that time, I had already written some books about Mexico. I'd been living in Mexico for more than 20 years, and I'd edited Mexico, a Traveler's Literary Companion, and, I mean, I'd written quite a lot about Mexico, and I'd read a lot of history, and so I was really sort of astonished that when I was looking at all these objects from his archive, one of them was this book, the Manual Espírita, and I said to the curator, what's this? She said, well, that's his book. And I'm like, oh, what? And to actually bring in one of the people who has written about this is Yolia Totolero Cervantes. She wrote a very deeply researched book called El Espiritismo Seduce a Francisco Madero. Mm-hmm. And she called his spiritism taboo. And I think that's fair.
Yeah,
I think that's fair. It's a taboo subject. People don't like to talk about it, with counted exceptions. So I'm actually really thrilled that you wanted to talk about this because, you know, I did all this work on the book, and yes, I've had some interviews and some reviews, but I would say a lot of people freeze up
Absolutely.
At the subject. They just freeze. They just go, it's like this iron curtain comes down of like, no, I don't want to know about this. I don't want to think about it. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to hear about it. It really is a difficult subject for many people. So I was surprised that I hadn't heard of it. And the minute I realized, wait a minute, he wrote this book, look at the date, 1911, just right there, never mind what's in it. I like to say it could be his grandma's corn muffin recipe. It doesn't matter what's in it. He's the leader of the 1910 revolution. He published this book in 1911. What is in this? We need to know.
Right. You know, as you say, the subject is very taboo. It's not taken seriously by serious people. I have an anecdote that I just need to share with you. I was in Mexico City about 3-4 weeks ago, maybe a month ago, and I was doing a talk at the Ministry of Foreign Relations, right there on Francisco Madero, I think, isn't it? Isn't that where it's located? I know it's right across from Bellas Artes, but afterwards they took us to dinner. We went to this restaurant in La Roma, and I was talking to these young, upcoming Mexican officials, educated in Europe, very articulate in English and Spanish, and I was talking about, I mentioned Gary Lachman's book, Dark Star Rising, about how some Trump supporters consciously used meme magic and chaos magic and other occult things to help him get elected, and his Trump's relationship to New Thought. And I told him about this Pepe the Frog meme magic that his supporters were using. And the young man I was talking to, brilliant young man, says, oh, that would never happen in Mexico. Mexicans could never be influenced.
I can totally see this.
And as much as I tried to tell him that it exists.
that's a very typical response.
And so,
that's not the reality. The people, Madero was very involved in this, as were many people around him. But yeah, I thank you for sharing that anecdote. It's a wonderful one, and it's very typical with what I've run across. But by the same token, the same slice of the sociological pie, you know, well-educated, mm-hmm. High-level, whatever, I've also had many people with that profile say to me in a very low voice, oh, you know, my grandfather, or,
right.
or you would never believe it, but they've told me they've seen, like, Doña Pachita doing psychic surgery. I mean, people, because I've written the book, people come and tell me things.
I bet.
And they're oftentimes very surprising people, like they're not who you would think. And so I'm aware at that level that things aren't always what they seem.
Right.
People do have ideas and knowledge and experiences that they don't talk about publicly.
Well, it is
a
cult.
Because they're so afraid of being ridiculed.
Yeah, and I can't help but think of the idea that an educated, middle-class, person would equate any kind of issue, you know, any kind of occult, spiritism, whatever, with those other manifestations of spirituality, alternative spirituality in Mexico, like you mentioned Doña Pachita and Teresa that Luis Urrea wrote about.
Yeah, Teresita and Niño Silencio.
But it's not something of the educated class, but Madero was incredibly educated and incredibly
learned.
For his
time and place, he was very well educated, and I think he considered himself at the cutting edge. And many of the people around him had the same ideas and considered themselves cutting edge. And this is something I think is a really important point. I don't make the argument that you need to believe what he believed.
Right.
I leave that to the reader in their own personal ideas and what they want to do. I'm not trying to convince anybody of anything. I'm simply saying, if you look at this book, I should actually tell you what I had to do with this book. So when I saw the book, my first thought was, well, my God, this is really important. And so I said, has it been translated? And that was really my first question, because I had just brought out a book of translations. And I was very, very aware that very few things are translated. Far fewer than most people would ever imagine. And so I thought, well, heavens, if nobody's translated it and I don't do it, it might be another 100 years, you know?
Right.
So I said to the curator, has anyone translated it? She said, no. And I said, well, can I translate it? She's like, well, yeah, you know, and they sent me a copy. And at that time, it was almost impossible to get a copy outside the archive. Mm-hmm. That's no longer true. You can Google it up and get a PDF online.
Oh, wow.
But at that time, what was it, maybe 2008, around then, it was really hard to find a copy. I won't say impossible, but you had to go to a rare book dealer and you had to look for a long time. Like, it took me almost 10 years to find a copy.
And even then, it wouldn't have his name on it. It would have, Pima?
Right, yeah, it's a pseudonym, yeah. But anyway, I translated it, and I found that translating it was easy. That wasn't a problem. But the ideas were so outside of the norm that I thought, well, translating it isn't really what I need to do here. I need to say, well, where did he get these ideas?
Right.
And that was when I read the Mexican historians who had done some work on this, which is Enrique Krause, Yolia Totolero Cervantes, Alejandro Rosas, Manuel Guerra de Luna. But they are definitely a minority of scholars of the revolution. It really is a bit of a taboo subject within that broader category. So I realized I needed to give the reader a sense of the history of metaphysical religion. Where did these ideas come from? Where did he get them? And so once I did that, I realized, well, whether you believe it or not is not really the issue. There is a long and important tradition of metaphysical literature in Western Europe and in the Americas. And if you are not aware of that, you're going to really miss the boat here.
Right.
I mean, he didn't get these ideas out of the blue.
Right. So you find the Spiritist Manual, and it's a manual that is questioned. There's a question, and then the spirits answer the question. It was believed by Madero that he was channeling. It didn't come from him. It came from a spirit.
I wouldn't say that necessarily. He has his mediumistic cuadernos, his mediumistic notebooks, where he was clearly channeling things.
His
treatise.
He's not
here to answer the question whether he channeled the book, but I think the book is a literary production.
Right.
Whether he channeled it or not, he's not here to tell us. But I think it's his understanding of what is the proper thing to believe about.
Okay, that's a good
the way to live your life and to believe reality. And I think he's writing more as like kind of an older brother, a leader. You know, he's addressing himself to younger people.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
And trying to convince them, kind of like a teacher.
That makes a lot of sense, especially towards the end of the manual where he talks about, you know, how you should eat and how you should sleep and almost, you know, almost everything. But I'm curious that as you read this Spiritus manual and you didn't understand the ideas, perhaps, you know, as deeply as you needed to understand what was going on, you started to do an intense amount of research into metaphysics.
Yeah. And it I read for many years, yeah. And not just, you know, the original works, but also academic works about the history of metaphysical religion. There are a number of important works in that category that were really helpful. And I think the most important one to mention of this long list is Catherine Albanese, who's a professor, I think, at UC Santa Barbara. She has a book that came out with Yale University Press called The Republic of Mind and Spirit, A Cultural History of American Metaphysical Religion. She does not address anything Mexican or Madero, but she's talking about spiritualism in the United States and other metaphysical ideas. And she's saying, look, the problem, I mean, to kind of boil it all down, this huge academic tome down to a few sentences, she's saying, look, these are not institutional churches. Like, if you wanted to write a history of the Catholic Church or the Episcopalian Church or the Baptist, you know, there'd be a filing cabinet somewhere.
Right.
You know, there'd be archives. But these guys, they got together largely, with some exceptions, they largely got together in private, and they would hold seances in private. Mm-hmm. And this was in a Catholic society where, you know, people were told they'd burn in hell for doing something like that. So they were pretty private about it.
Right.
So there's not, it's not like it's something easy to write about, even if you wanted to. You know, who was Spiritist and who wasn't? You have to do a lot of detective work to figure that out.
Right. But the research led you to the Burnt Out District in the eastern United States. Can you tell us a little bit about how your research led us there? And
yeah,
maybe even a little
really
bit.
That's a really interesting story. Well, Spiritism, which is what Madero encountered in France, and really became a very strong adherent of it. His father was a Spiritist in Mexico before they went to France, but it was when he was studying in France that he really had his moment of conversion. And Spiritism is very French. Where does it come from? It comes from American spiritualism, with a U, and that's from upstate New York. And this is a part of New York where Spiritism sort of broke out in 1848, like a huge fashion of tables tipping and ghosts appearing and all sorts of things. But it's also an area with other religious movements, including Mormonism. So it's got a very rich history. And an academic escapes me at the moment, named it the Burned Over District, because people were so passionate. It was as if the region just burned over with their religious passion. So it starts in the mid-19th century in upstate New York and quickly spreads to Europe, and then becomes a little bit different and codified in a body of work by Alan Kardec in French.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what Madero encountered. But then by the time Madero encountered this, there were other important movements coming through the United States, Mexico, I would say all of the Americas and all of Europe, which were theosophy. And Madero was not a theosophist, mm-hmm. but he was very influenced by the theosophists and their passion for the Bhagavad Gita in particular, and some of their ideas about reincarnation.
Right.
And he also in Europe encountered a lot of other occult ideas. So one of the things I was able to do that was a lot of fun, although it was challenging, was I was able to go into his library, his personal library, which is in Mexico City, in the Centro de Estudios de la Historia de México. And that was a great opportunity because it was difficult to digest it. It's mm-hmm. just so much very esoteric literature. And so I would encounter these things and say, well, now what is this? And who is this? And then I would have to kind of go home and I would have to do some reading and do some Googling and do some more reading, you know, and it took me a while to kind of go through it all. But I did that.
And it gave you a more of a context of where he was coming from.
Yeah. So that's really what I've done with my book. It's called Metaphysical Odyssey into the Mexican Revolution because it recounts his story of his conversion to Spiritism and how that led him to the revolution and how he saw the revolution within a metaphysical context. And that explains a lot of things that I think otherwise are very difficult to explain. But it's also my personal odyssey of encountering the manuscript and realizing, how can I make sense of this? Mm-hmm. And then finally, for the reader who may or may not be familiar with Mexican history and the history of the revolution and may or may not probably is not in many cases familiar with metaphysical history, the history of metaphysical religion. So to kind of explain to the reader, what is all of this?
Right.
So that's what my book is that introduces my translation of his book.
Well, you know what really for me was incredibly fascinating is that you say that, and you know, I'm sure this is well known, that the Mexican Revolution was in a sense launched by a book, and that was the book that he wrote, the presidential succession of 1910,
right.
The manual he wrote while he was in jail. But after reading this story, it seems that he was very clearly at least believed in communication with spirits that were advising him. So I'm wondering if we could say truthfully that the Mexican Revolution was really launched by two books. The one that you translated, which is the Spiritus Manual, and that one, because, I mean, it seems like there couldn't be one without the other.
Well, I would say the ideas in the Spiritus Manual are fundamental to understanding Maduro as the leader of the revolution. I wouldn't say that book launched the revolution, though, because it was a book that he actually tried to keep secret after it came out. I mean, he wanted to evangelize people, but he didn't want anybody to know that it was him. He knew it would damage him politically. And so I think he wanted to convert everybody to Spiritism, but he realized that president at that point, that was going to be suicide. And so I don't think that book played that role. But the La Sucesión Presidencial en 1900 días, the presidential succession in 1910, that book was used as a tool of political organization. I mean, he would literally, the book would go out to people, and the idea was that this was the platform for the party.
Right.
And the party, literally, people organized around the book. And the interesting point, this is a point actually made by Manuel Guerra de Luna, was that the method for organizing the Spiritists was exactly the same. That they would have some literature, and they would have a circle of people,
right.
And then the circles would get together in a bigger circle, and then there would be a congress. And so they were using literature to organize. And but I don't think it would be fair to say that the Spiritus Manual played that role at that point.
Well, I think what I mean is more like El Rio Bajo El Rio, right? I mean,
Bajo El Rio, claro.
Yeah,
claro,
there's this
absolutely.
Energy. You know, let me give an example of what I'm trying to say. Not that people were reading the Spiritus Manual and that it was so public that, you know, let's do a revolution because of it. But when, after the revolution, he was in Chapultepec Castle and there was, I guess, a coup going on all over Mexico City. People were being killed everywhere. And he left the castle of Chapultepec and rode a white horse all the way to the Zócalo. And were bullets flying over his head, and there were soldiers behind him, and they were getting shot. There were bodies everywhere, but he rode on that white horse. And I'm thinking that image itself is so archetypal. It's so powerful that I can't imagine he would not have been influenced by his faith. And the faith that either if he gets shot, it doesn't matter because he's just going to, you know, his energy is just going to go on to, you know, something else. Or he believed he wasn't going to get shot, which he wasn't, which isn't a miracle in itself. And I guess that's what I mean, that his actions seem to be motivated by his true faith in the spirits.
Yeah. For me, that's really clear. And actually going back also, I mean, that's a very profound moment when he rode the white horse, when he knew there was a coup d'etat and he rode the white horse from a huge white stallion from Chapultepec Castle all the way down. Yeah, that was really an iconic moment. For me, it's also the fact that he was become a revolutionary in the first place. He wasn't your average guy. He was the grandson of like one of the wealthiest industrialists in Mexico, with a strong, strong, strong connection to Porfirio Diaz and Limantour. And he had a lot to lose personally. His father did, his brothers did, his cousins did. He basically, did something that was really almost inconceivable.
Yeah.
I think it becomes conceivable when you realize that he's read the Bhagavad Gita, and he's got the story from Lord Krishna telling the warrior Arjuna, that the duty to justice is more important than life itself, and you have all these incarnations, and you just have to do your duty. And the Bhagavad Gita is a very important influence, and you see that in the Manual Espírita. So it's not just a rehash. It is largely a rehash of Kardecian Spiritism, but it has these other cutting-edge things in there, like the Bhagavad Gita, and I think that's very fundamental. And this is also a point made by Manuel Guerra de Luna. Mm-hmm. So my work really stands on the work of these other scholars who were very helpful.
Right, but your work is also a work of, it's a literary work, it's a work of art.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I really appreciate your asking me and talking to me about this essay, because it's one of the reasons I also this is a difficult book because I'm not a historian, I'm not an academic historian of the revolution. And I kind of felt this book needed to go to a university press, but I knew it would go through that process of getting refereed, and they would take the art out of it. And I felt like, no, this is a work of art. This is a work of creative nonfiction that I have written about this translation. And I felt very firm about that. My favorite part, I'll tell you my favorite part. It was the banana peel of destiny.
Oh, can you remind me
Remember the banana peel of destiny? where I get to say Porfirio Diaz. If there was a banana peel of destiny, Porfirio Diaz stepped on it. And I thought, you get to do that if you're a creative, if you're a poet.
Right.
You get to do that.
Absolutely.
If you're a creative nonfiction writer, you get to do things like that. If you're an academic historian, you don't.
Right. Right.
So I had a lot of fun. I had an awful lot of fun.
You know, one of the interesting things, I'm wondering if it surprised you that one of the most enthusiastic communities to receive this book was the metaphysical, the occult community itself. Did that surprise you?
It pleased me because I really didn't know what to expect. I wasn't really talking to any of the people who are current practitioners of this. I was reading more about the history of it, and I was reading the literature from the 19th century and the early 20th century. So I wasn't really in close contact with them, and so I really didn't know what they would say. And I was really pleased that they were very open, and they said I got the history right. So that was
that's
very,
good.
That
yeah.
was good.
Two histories, right? And there was one of them.
The spiritualism. Yeah, they said I got it right. So I got some reviews from some people who have some standing in the community, and so I was like, yay. That was very comforting for me. That I didn't make a hash of that, apparently. That was good.
I think because it's such a hidden community, and you always hear whenever anybody speaks of it, the woo-woo, things get too woo-woo. But I think with this community in particular, they seem to embrace any opportunity there is to associate mainstream culture with their beliefs. I mean, one of the first things you learn when you read about the Golden Order of the Dawn, for example, is that Yates was a member. You know, and
that's right.
Anytime
a lot of very important people were involved in this stuff. There are a lot of people who just reject this without realizing, who are some of the people who were involved in these things, and knew Madame Blavatsky, or would do astral travel. There's some very distinguished people. You'd be surprised.
Right.
I would say that was a really nice thing. And one thing that they all said was that they were delighted to learn that Madero, there was a distinguished Mexican person that they could claim as one of their own. And so that was nice.
I'm sure it was very exciting for that community, and it's very exciting for the community that I identify with. I'm a Chicano, Latinx, Mexican American, and And it's just allows me to look at the Mexican Revolution with much more imagination, you know, rather than looking at the facts.
Well, you guys are in such an amazing place in El Paso.
Yeah.
And of course, the Daniel Romo book, right?
Right.
Ringside Future Revolution. And Dad has all this stuff in there about Teresita. And I mean, there's a lot of really interesting things, and people have come through El Paso relevant to Madero and the revolution.
Right. Well, the book is called Metaphysical Odyssey into the Mexican Revolution. And maybe I have time for one more really quick question. Going over this book and trying to translate it, I imagine there were a lot of specific words that you had to research or even images or something. And what was, out of everything you've researched, what was the most interesting to you that might appear somehow in a future creative work of yours?
That might appear in something of mine?
Yeah, like some...
I think the idea of the imaginal world, which Spiritus would conceptualize as the astral world.
Yeah.
I think that's a really interesting concept, and I've actually been reading a bit more about some of the ideas behind what is an imaginal, as opposed to an imaginary,
right.
An imaginal world, and there's actually quite a bit of very interesting literature on that, apart from just esoteric stuff, but more philosophical and even going back to like Sufi ideas and things like that.
Right.
So, you know, that there's this imaginal landscape that isn't just imaginary. So I haven't gone too far into that, but I have been reading a bit about it. And I find that kind of interesting since I write fiction. And I'm sure you would also resonate with that as a fiction writer.
Right.
That there's kind of some, once you start writing fiction, things seem a little different.
and sometimes when you're writing a fiction and you enter into a landscape that surprises you, you know, there's this sense that this landscape is, to make the distinction, imaginal rather than imagination. Would that be safe to say?
It was a lot of fun to write. It was definitely a lot of fun to write.
Yeah.
It was disconcerting at times.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
Well, thank you for joining us on Words on a Wire. The book is Metaphysical Odyssey into the Mexican Revolution, Francisco E. Madero, and his secret book, Spiritist Manual. Thank you, Sia Mayo.
Well, it's been a great honor to talk with you, and in particular, get your questions about the creative side of this. So thank you very much. Okay.